It's 73 days to the 2024 general elections. Good morning again and welcome to Joy News Desk. We are live on DSTV channel 421, GoTV channel 125, on all social media platforms and around the world at myjoyonline.com. Coming up, Constitution Review Consultative Committee proposes that members of parliament who want to be ministers should be made to resign from parliament. We've got a conversation on that, and in our climate focus today, we'll take you to Dambai, where a man has founded Dream Village, a sustainable farming and training center to nurture the next generation of climate activists. And then we've got all these plus business updates on our desk today. You want to stay for details. Begin. The Constitution Review Consultative Committee is proposing a raft of changes to the 1992 Constitution. The committee, the Ministry of Parliamentary Affairs, wants members of Parliament who are appointed ministers to resign from Parliament and also requires parliamentary approval for appointments to some key constitutional bodies, including the Electoral Commission, Auditor General, and Shraj. Kwekwa Sante has more in the following report.
This 1992 constitution has not been amended for some time. There are now calls for an urgent review to meet the needs of the time. A report by a commission set up by former President Mills to review the constitution has been sitting on a shelf and has not been implemented. The Ministry of Parliamentary Affairs under Osei Chairman Sabonsu was sought to get this underway and put together a constitutional review consultative committee chaired by a lecturer at the University of Ghana Law School, Madame Clara Berry Kasati. The committee is now recommending, among others, that criminal trials must start within 6 months after a suspect is arrested, recommending an end to the cycle of setting up committees to review salaries of Article 71 office holders and instead institute a formula. According to the committee, MPs who are appointed ministers must resign from parliament while also asking for appointments to Shraj, EC, and the Auditor General be approved by parliament.
Now, liberty, the CRC recommended that the time reduced from 48 hours. They are required to be brought before a court within 48 hours. The recommendation is that it should be reduced to 24 hours, and we are agreed on it.
Former Minority Leader Haruna Idrisu wants any review of the Constitution to diminish the wide powers of the President and end the winner-takes-all phenomenon.
Winner take away all. We must do away with that in the future Constitution of Ghana. This will not take away all. It must be taken away so that Ghana can have a proportional kind of representative government like what pertains in South Africa. We also must water down the powers of the president. So Clara, I'm at it with your thought on it.
Retired Supreme Court Judge Jones Duche also wants the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court reduced.
We have to decide whether we want all our ministers to come from parliament or to be outside parliament. This hybrid for me will not work. We have been talking a lot about Supreme Court appointments, capping the Supreme Court. Having just exited the court, I know that my colleagues will do a yeoman's job because the Constitution has given them too many jurisdictions. Too many. And my younger brother who is here will bear me out. And so the Constitution has to look at maybe reducing the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court.
But with the country in an election season and with barely 3 months to an election, Minister for Parliamentary Affairs, Osei Chairman Sabonsu, says this should not stop the review from going ahead.
I've heard people opine that in an election year, there's not much that can be done when it comes to constitutional amendment. With the greatest respect, I beg to differ. All the amendments to the 1992 Republican Constitution happened in 1996, after the election, in November and December. All the amendments happened in 1996, after the presidential and general elections. So I believe that we are not stopped by time to do the consultation that we intend to continue today.
The stakeholders' consultation workshop was to afford stakeholders the opportunity to review the report of the CRCC and build consensus ahead of its implementation.
Well, let's get into this and put it in perspective. We've been joined by Alhaji Inusa Fuseni. He's former Member of Parliament for Tamale Central, former Minister for Lands and Natural Resources. Thank you so much for your time on Joy News Desk.
Thank you for having me.
Right. So let's begin from this constitutional review. Now, according to the documents that have been sent, or the documents circulating round, it looks like... let me take your view on this. As former Member of Parliament and Minister, what is your general opinion on the proposal by the Constitution Review consultative meeting to amend key provisions of the 1992 Constitution?
So thank you. We've been practicing the Constitution for about 30 years now, and there are certain provisions in the Constitution that clearly call for a relook because the Constitution is failing to deliver the promise made to us in the preamble to create equality of opportunity for all Ghanaians and prosperity. And so we need to look at the institutional mechanisms that we have put into the Constitution to deliver same. The institutions, the framework, and all those things. And so the Constitution has come up for review, and some provisions must... be tweaked in such a way as to ensure that the promise of the Fourth Republic is delivered.
In terms of tweaking some of the provisions, the committee is suggesting that members of parliament who are appointed as ministers should resign from parliament. Do you believe this is necessary to maintain the separation of powers, or would it weaken parliamentary oversight over the executive?
So, yes, you've asked the same question. I mean, the separation of powers, the principle of separation of powers, says that no one institution must have an overbearing influence on another institution so as to compromise the rights and liberties of an individual in the state. Now, the hybrid constitution that is the fulcrum of our, democratic experiment is in Article 78.1, which says that the president can appoint a majority of his ministers from parliament. That creates the fusion. Now, so that provision imbibes aspects of the Westminster type of government and the strictly presidential type of government. Now, what we've realized is that when it suits us, we defer, we lean towards the Westminster one form or the other. Now, Ghana is only one of a few countries that is practicing this kind of system. And we realize that the Article 78 has worked to weaken Parliament in its oversight responsibility over the executive.
Did you say it's working to weaken Parliament?
Yes, it's worked to weaken Parliament. What I mean by that is that because the president draws from parliament, and the prospect of a member of parliament occupying transitioning to the executive, you will see that parliament as presently constituted is failing in its responsibility to hold the executive accountable. And so that clearly means that if parliament is unable, unwilling to hold the executive accountable, that institution, which is a critical bulwark for democracy, is failing.
Okay. So what challenges then, or advantages, so to speak, could arise from members of parliament being forced to resign once appointed to ministerial position, especially in terms of maintaining party dominance in parliament?
Well, the advantage clearly is simply that we will go to a strictly presidential system of government, where you can have a member of parliament also being in the executive, where members of parliament are not and particularly members of parliament from the government side are not working to undermine each other in order to catch the attention of the executive to move from parliament into the executive, where members of parliament will fear no recourse, retribution if they hold the executive accountable in terms of how it expends our public resources, where the country as a whole will build career legislators, where a person goes to parliament just to serve as the representative of the people, as a legislator, and also as to deliberate on matters of national importance, and not be eyeing the executive for potential recruitment into the executive.
Interesting. So, I mean, the committee is also proposing that parliament should approve appointments to constitutional bodies like the Electoral Commission, the Attorney General, and SHRAD. In your opinion, does this ensure more transparency, or could this politicize these independent institutions or bodies?
You are looking to ensure inclusiveness in the appointment processes. These constitutional bodies are indeed constitutional bodies. They are not agencies of state, of government. They are agencies of state.
Right.
And so you will want the legitimacy of those institutions to be above board. Can you imagine that the chairperson of the Electoral Commission is appointed by a bipartisan committee of parliament and to test majority or a majority of all members of parliament voting to approve such a person? The president will be enjoined by the very fact that the threshold of approval to consult the other party in order to appoint somebody who will be acceptable to both parties. And I think that will enhance the legitimacy of those constitutional bodies.
Okay, please hold for me. Let me bring on board the conversation Justice Abdullahi. He's a lecturer at UPSA Law School. Justice, thank you so much for joining the conversation on Joy News Desk. If you can hear me, please unmute. Let's get straight into it. So now the committee, the Constitutional Consultative Committee, is proposing that criminal trials should start within 6 months of a suspect's arrest. Do you think this is a feasible goal, given the current challenges in Ghana's judicial system?
Indeed, I think that it is feasible. Of course, before I start, I'd like to extend my deepest regards to my senior brother, Yusuf Saini. I mean, who is on the line on the other side of it? I haven't seen him for a while, so my regards to him.
Right.
Now, back to your question. So, listen, I think that the 6 months being proposed is actually too long, considering that we do not work well with discretionary powers, I mean, in this country. I would rather we give limited time. Maximum that I would propose should be within a month. And this is purely because usually we tend to abuse arresting powers and use, and indeed bail, application for bails, and indeed the grant of bail has been abused over the period by our security agencies. And indeed, so because of that, if we make it mandatory, even though it is not, you don't find that elsewhere, if it is mandatory that we legislate on when trial is to commence and we make it 1 month, specified period of 1 month, I think it would push our security agencies to ensure that by the time they effect an arrest, they would have had sufficient evidence and information at hand before they proceed to arrest the person. Because at this moment, we use those powers arbitrarily. Somebody makes an allegation against you, unfounded as it may be, and the next thing, you are under arrest simply because a police officer may get some coins out of the arrest that is effected,
right,
or some other benefits that would be effected, that would accrue as a result of the arrest. And these powers have been abused over the period. And so if we are thinking of getting this better, then my best recommendation, 1 month will be the period for prosecution, because as I've indicated, so that by the time an arrest is actually made, the arresting officer would have conducted all his necessary investigations, gathered sufficient evidence, and good enough to put you before court. It might not necessarily be enough to secure conviction, but it will be enough to prosecute. And if we do that, even if it's not sufficient, that 1 month may be used as a period to gather additional information and evidence to prosecute. Because at this moment, there are cases, and this is coming up because there are cases that have traveled over 2-3 years. Personally, I've handled cases for 4 years and there's no prosecution. You are still just going to court every single day. Judge will make an order for disclosures to be made and it will never be complied with. And every single day, the state will come seeking for an adjournment upon adjournment. And the life of the suspect, or this time the accused person, is on hold. He cannot travel. He cannot engage in any meaningful business. Sometimes he's even suspended or interdicted, depending on where he works. And his life is literally on hold.
So you agree to the recommendations of the committee that is proposing that criminal trial should start within 6 months. I'm curious to know, though, how
No, I'm not agreeing to that. I'm agreeing to legislating on that principle.
Okay.
But proposing that it be made 1 month rather than 6 months.
Okay.
This is my counter-proposal.
Okay.
So there are two different things.
And I want to find out how this would affect our judicial or justice delivery system, especially in ensuring that suspects are not unduly detained without trial, which is what you were just talking about.
Absolutely the point.
Mm.
Because really we have a constitution that says that.
It appears we have some network interference. I wanted us to conclude on the criminal trials before we circle back to office hold Article 71 office holders. He's
fine.
Back with us.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, we lost you there for a second.
Can you hear me?
Please, yes. Continue your submission.
So my question is that what we are confronted with at this moment is continuous abuse of suspects. And if we all have come to that conclusion that this is not helpful to our collective good, then what we need to do is to ensure that we have limited time for prosecution. Now, that way, the pressure on the judiciary is also reduced drastically. Because what we have now is that because of the pendency of 3-5 years cases, we keep having backlog of cases and judges are unable to deal with them. And so they keep just piling up. But if I come with my case and within 1 month I start trial, record time by 6 months I'll be done. If I'm done, a new case will come and the judge will be able to deal with it expeditiously. So you may not have this kind of backlog of cases as we have today. And
okay.
Of course, because it would have reduced all these drama that we are confronted with on a daily basis.
Okay, so let's circle back to the conversation about members of parliament, appointment, and ministers, which is what UNICEF Hosseini and I were discussing before you joined the conversation. I want to know what you make of it. The committee is suggesting that members, MPs, who are appointed as ministers should resign, and that is from parliament. Do you believe this is necessary to maintain the separation of powers, or would it weaken parliamentary oversight over the executive?
Right. So I think the benefit is not far from any of us purview. Let's remember that this is not... This goes through, it wouldn't be the first time. We've experimented on this back in the Second Republic, actually, when we had, actually, I think that was the Third Republic, there in Liman's regime. So where we had a purely presidential system. So this is 1979 Constitution. We had President Liman, who didn't have his members of parliament as ministers of state, and indeed, if you were appointed a minister of state, by the nature of that constitution, you ought to remove yourself from parliament by resigning and then taking up that position if you so wish. And the best it does is that it gives a strong parliament. You have a stronger parliament that does an oversight, undertakes an oversight responsibility diligently and carefully, because they do so, at least from the surface of it, with the nation at heart. There are always mischiefs that sometimes come along with it. And President Liman suffered some of these mischiefs when he had his budget thrown out for several times over. Because, of course, you see, the idea is that once you have members of parliament focused on their purely parliamentary duties, they do not care who is looking and who is checking their activities and whether or not there is a reward coming from the president to be made a minister or anything, because they know that they came to Parliament to undertake parliamentary business. And so they did not have any eye on the executive. But what we have presently is members of Parliament, actually people go to Parliament because they see it as a stepping stone to the executive. And this takes the beauty and indeed the quality away from being good members of Parliament. And to achieve the best in our parliamentary system, if we went back to that system, I think that all of us would be the beneficiaries of that system. And it's the best that we actually need. Considering the polarized nature of our current Parliament, and indeed the Parliament of the Fourth Republic, I mean, it's been so polarized that without going back to the previous Parliament, that was 1979 Parliament, we may not be able to move forward as a nation. And keep having a rubber stamping Parliament going forward.
Not too different from the submission from Minister Fuseni, and I want to come back to you. So, I mean, I'll give you some time to reflect on the things that Justice Abdullahi has been saying or sharing with us. But then after that, you can answer this. Aside from the current proposals, are there other parts of the 1992 Constitution that you think should be reviewed or amended to reflect modern governance needs?
I don't know whether it's going to matter.
No, Mr. Fuseni.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Fuseni, I was saying that I'll give you a minute or so to reflect on Justice Abdullahi's submission, and then you can answer for me on whether or not, aside the current proposals, there are other parts of the Constitution that you think should be reviewed or amended to reflect modern governance needs.
Well, so Justice Abdullahi bears the name of my father.
Okay.
And I'm not surprised that I agree entirely with him.
Okay.
Because that's my father. Now, so and we are added them on this matter, to be honest with you. Because anybody who is looking to develop our democracy, and let me state without any fear of equivocation, that having lived under a democratic rule all this while, the longest in the history of this country, I do not want to live under any other regime. I want to live under a democracy. It is a democracy that has afforded me the opportunity to even critique our constitution. I mean, we have been ruled in this country without a constitution. So you can imagine. And we have not developed rule, norms, values, conventions like the British system, where you expect that the government will do what's right to the people, even without a written constitution. So the constitution is a framework that shapes and guides government in its deliverables.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so at any point in time, you must look at the Constitution to see whether you are meeting the aspirations of the Constitution and the people of the country. For instance, today we are battling with the Electoral Commission. Why? The Electoral Commission is losing its legitimacy and its integrity largely because it is perceived to be appointed by only Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo. Never in the history of this country, except in the beginning of the Fourth Republic, where we were establishing those institutions, and where the late Jerry John Rawlings, our first president under the Fourth Republic, was privileged to appoint all members of the Electoral Commission. This is the only time that we have a sitting president appointing almost all the members of the Electoral Commission. And so you will want to see, what do you do to secure the integrity of such a very vital referee in a democratic a country like ours? And so the recommendation, and President Kufuor did not say it in so many words, they will limit the time, the term of office of the Electoral Commission. They will limit it. And so the Electoral Commission must do only 3 terms, for instance. Or do we say that the Electoral Commission must, the position must be advertised by the Public Services Commission, and then interviews held, and that's the Kenyan way. And then the persons who will pass the interview, 3 of them are submitted to the president to make his choice, and then there is a parliamentary approval of 2/3 majority. What do we do?
Right.
Because we're seeking to establish an institution of state, particularly so-called, and not an institution of government as is being perceived now. Okay, so and if so, why, how come that the only members of parliament and the executive and some Article 71 office holders are enjoined to declare their assets?
Yeah.
What about those many other institutions of state, including the Secretary to the President?
In fact, Mr. Fuseni, when you talk about Article 71 office holders, you know the proposal is also saying there should be a change in the setup of the formula to determine the emoluments of Article 71 office holders, instead of relying on committees every 4 years, which could lead to more consistency. Do you believe this support? Do you support this reform? And how might it impact public perception of fairness in governance?
So Article 71 appears on its face to infringe Article 17, equality of treatment of public servants. People in equal circumstances must be treated equally. And so there must be a relationship between the benefits and according to Article 71 office holders and all other public office holders under in this country under Article 17, equality of treatment. Now we appreciate that because of the selection process, you are unable to tell what actually informed the list under Article 71. What is it? Because you find judges, you find elected political officers, you find ministers of state. You find
these are key players in terms of our governance. I mean, from all the three arms of government, right?
I'm just saying that any person who draws on the consolidated fund is a public servant.
Well,
so if you were looking to see, because we are talking about elected public officers, and so they are on contract. The president is on contract for 4 years. If his contract renewed, he has another 4 years, and after that he goes. Whether he performed well or not, he has to go. Or we are talking about members of parliament who has only 4 years, and then it has to go back to the people for a renewal of the contract. If they were those containing Article 71, you will understand that these are people whose tenure of office is not guaranteed.
Okay, you have to hold for me. Let me throw the same question to Justice Abdullahi and get his bit. I'll come back to you. So, Justice Abdullahi, now the proposal, right, is to change the setup or the formula in determining the emoluments of Article 71 office holders instead of relying on committees every 4 years. My question to you is, do you support this reform, and how might it, you know, impact public perception in terms of fairness in governance?
Well, once again, similar to what my senior brother said, it looks like, when it comes to issues of governance, I think that there are a lot of things that people from all walks of life would agree to, that they are the ideal thing for us to do. The reforms being proposed on this subject, for instance, literally, I'm sure everyone would agree that indeed we need a reform. I remember when the issue of the former first ladies and spouses of our leaders came up, and the benefits that they get, I mean, highly an unconstitutional conduct, unlawful conduct. It brought about this same issue about Article 72. Public holders, and it's a clear case of ripping the state off just for the benefit of a section of the society, those in leadership positions, when all of us are contributing to the kitty and expecting that the constitution has plainly stated that we should all be treated equally, but a section has been taken out, and these people have been taken out not because of their qualification or any peculiar characteristics that they have, but simply because they have volunteered to serve us. But it turns out that looking into their emoluments, we are rather serving them. Everywhere you go in life, what you'd find is that those with better academic or skill, some particular set of skill qualifications, get better pay. Or for other reasons, because they are in corporate leadership positions, which could have accrued to them only because of their peculiar skill set, whether acquired through education or formal education or through trade. But we have in our leadership scenario where our elected officials, of course, as my brother said, including our judiciary, and indeed, as you rightly pointed out, the members of the three arms of government get all the booty as against everyone else. And the weird part is that it is completely the opposite in other jurisdictions.
That's why we need to review that, right? That's why there should be a new system to determine the emolument of... Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because elsewhere, it is the opposite.
Right. That's all that time will allow us to get into. But right before we go, just a quick yes or no on this, and then we move on. Now, they are saying the chairperson of the EC, the Auditor General and Assurance Commissioner, must be appointed with prior approval from Parliament. Is that a right call or not? I'll start with you because I was still on you, Justice Abdullahi. Then I'll wrap up with...
Indeed, it's a good call, but I would rather the appointment be made in-house. I would rather... So the commission, for instance, assume you're dealing with the commission, the senior boss automatically succeeds the outgoing. This is my recommendation to that.
Okay.
Similarly, when it comes to the Office of the Chief Justice, it's the same proposal I made, that the council should appoint the senior boss so that the intrusion of the executive be limited. Go to the police and all other similar institutions, they have governing bodies. Or some those that do not have governing bodies, they have councils and other seniors that I believe that there should be an automatic succession. But the appointment to the board or to the commission or could be done by the president in conjunction with Parliament.
Okay.
But to head, my position on the head should be an automatic succession so that it reduces the political tension and the who knows what and all of that. So we know that at every point in time, we know that if Jim Mensah leaves, which I pray she leaves very soon because of the mess she's causing, automatically the senior boss succeeds there.
Which would be Dr. Bosman. All right. Thank you so much, Justice Abdullahi. And he's a lecturer at UPSC Law School. Let me come to you, Mr. Fuseini, for... he's saying that succession in terms of the leaders of these state institutions, SHRAJ, EC, and the Attorney General's office, what do you say? And then you can give me a wrap of your thoughts as well.
See, that is why we need a constitutional review in the forms. You see, Justice Abdullahi is looking at another dimension, and which dimension is balancing the requirement of having independent institutions against the intrusion of executive in the appointment process. And that's why he thinks that the way to curtail that is to allow for an automatic progression.
Wouldn't that in any way remove the political or partisan element or influence from the ascension of that position in terms of keeping it independent as a state institution?
Well, under this present constituted electoral commission, I don't think that will remove the partisanship. Both Bosman, who is next, and Jim Mensah were appointed by the same governor. Both of them were very active players on the political landscape in their early days. Right? So we know them. So it won't serve the need that is trying, or it won't solve the problem that we are trying to solve. So that's why I'm saying that, look, in Kenya, they had this problem. It even led them into war. The Electoral Commission. And they all came together and said, look, let's subject the appointment of the appointment process of the Electoral Commissioner to the Public Services Commission. And they must be competitive advertisement. People must put in their CVs and appear before the PSC and then go through an interview, and then we shortlist three, we give it to the president, and the president selects who he wants, and then we submit that thing to parliament. And then the parliament approves that person by two-thirds. So you see, there are inbuilt mechanisms to ensure that the president doesn't have his way.
Mr. Inusa Fuseini, thank you. That's all that time will allow us for. And Mr. Inusa Fuseini is former member of parliament for Tamale Central. And we were also, and he's also the former Lance and Natural Resources Minister. We're also joined by Justice Abdullahi, a lecturer at UPSA Law School. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for that. Now, away from this, 11 Stop Galamsey Now protesters have been remanded into prison custody, while 28 others have been remanded into police custody after appearing before the Accra Circuit Court on charges related to their participation in the anti-illegal mining demonstration. A bench warrant has been issued for one of them, who the police say was released on inquiry bail and failed to appear in court on Tuesday. Kenneth Jesse reports.
is where about 39 of the protesters of the Stop Galamsey Now were remanded into prison and police custodies. Now, about 21 of them were remanded into prison custody, while 18 were remanded into police custody. Now, there's one who a bench warrant has been issued for her arrest, because according to the police, when she was bailed, the condition was that she appears before the court, which she failed to do. Well, one of the lawyers for some of the accused persons did indicate his displeasure with the ruling and vowed to appeal.
2 weeks. But we are going to repeat the appeal again. We are going to appeal against it at the Human Rights Court. And we are sure that within some days we'll have them released. Yes, that's because we were given limited time to have conference with our clients. So I'm sure with this, knowing where exactly they are right now, we are going to get their instructions and repeat the application again. And I'm sure it will be granted. We are not satisfied because the main person why I'm here is Felicity Nelson, and she has not been brought to the court. So we have to look for where exactly she is. And I'm sure at the coming days, if we can't find her, we will bring habeas corpus application at the court to get her to be brought to the court. 19 of them have been taken, and 12 of them, their plea have been deferred to the next agenda date, because we raised the concern that they have not been served with the charge sheet. They only surprised us with the charge sheet at the courtroom. So we raised the same point, and the judge agreed with us and adjourned the matter for their plea to be taken. We are only disappointed at the number of days that they have been remanded, and some remanded into police prison custody, which is clearly not befitting of people who are protesting for Galamsey.
There were a flurry of emotions when this judgment was passed. And even before this judgment was passed, when most of these protesters were being brought here to this premises, they shouted that they were innocent. Some called on the authorities to do something, saying that we should emancipate ourselves from mental slavery. Lead convener of Democracy Hub, Oliver Bakavomowo, is also expected before the court tomorrow. We will definitely be here to bring you all the fallouts from that hearing as well. From the Accra Circuit Court in Accra, Kenneth Jesse for Joy News.
And this is a developing story, and we'll be following to bring you all the details and update. But we still have Alhaji Nusuf Hussaini on phone with us, and on Zoom actually. And he wants to make a comment. Alhaji, I understand you have an interest in this story. Share your thoughts with us.
So I'm a member of the Lawyers for Protest Defense. Now, we don't think that it is right to remand people into prison or police custody when they were just exercising their constitutional right to demonstrate. It's a travesty of justice, and it's totally unacceptable in a democratic country like ours. Yes, they could be on bail to come answer to the charges, but to remand people to prison or police custody just because they were exercising their fundamental rights to protest is totally unacceptable.
But Alhaji, we did see in some videos that were circulating on social media that some of these protesters were instigating violence. We saw, for example, Oliver Bakavomowo demobilize a police vehicle. There was one particular video you saw a gentleman just hitting the police, and they didn't hit him back. Well, as far as I saw in that video, they didn't hit him back. So some of these protesters were only arrested because they were instigating violence, were they not?
So you just cited two clear examples of people whose conduct you do not approve. And you know, in this country, we frown upon vicarious responsibility for criminal offense. The fact that you do not approve of the behavior of Oliver Bakavomowo or that person who was hitting the police does not mean that their behavior should be a license for the arrest of all other people who were lawfully demonstrating. Okay. You get it? So that is why we have a problem. Indeed, even if Oliver Oliver Zamawo demobilized a police vehicle, or another person was hitting a policeman. That's an assault. Assault of a police officer in the performance of his duties. Is it a crime that is not admissible to bail? Is it? So, what the state is trying to do, in our view, is to instill fear in demonstrators that they can be put in detention for a number of days simply for exercising their fundamental right.
Alhaji, last bit before I let you go. One could also argue that what the police are doing in this politically charged climate that we're experiencing, 73 days or so to the election, the police are sending a strong statement out there that you cannot break the law or you cannot instigate violence and go scot-free with it. How about that?
That is not a strong statement, is it? The strongest statement the police are sending is that they will stand with the executive and visit hardship on the citizens. What were they demonstrating about? They were demonstrating about the degradation and destruction of our water bodies. They wanted to draw attention to that. The executive have closed their eyes to the wanton destruction of our natural resources.
Right.
What better way to draw attention than to picket? And if the police had reason to believe that their picketing was obstructing traffic, yes, they could disperse them. Now there are international police rules which should guide the police.
Right. You are part of the members, lawyers for the protesters. Is that correct?
I'm part of lawyers for protest defense.
Protest defense.
We say that any group of people exercising their fundamental right to protest must be defended because it's a democratic right they are exercising.
Thank you so much, Alhaji Nusuf Hussaini. That's former Member of Parliament of Tamale Central and former Minister for Lands and Natural Resources. Away from this, we'll take a break and we'll return with more on News Desk.